This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Of Free Thought and the First Amendment. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, your weekly antidote to the religious right domination of the airwaves.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And I haven't always been that way. I was a former minister who preached for 19 years, but I saw the light.
And hey, if you want to read more about what prompted Dan to lose faith in faith, Dan has two books. The first one, Losing Faith in Faith, From Preacher to Atheist. And when did that come out, Dan?
1992.
And Dan's latest book is Godless, published by Ulysses Press last fall, and both are available at ffrf.org.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are the free-thinking troublemakers who like to sue governments when they step out of line and violate the First Amendment of the Constitution. Our members are atheists and agnostics and other types of non-believers, skeptics, non-religious, and we work hard to protect that valued principle of the separation between religion and government, and also to educate the public about the views of those of us who are here in this country who don't believe. We are here, and we have a point of view which is important, and that's what this show is all about.
And we've made a lot of news this week.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation has an exciting, we think really exciting, and very important new federal lawsuit that's been grabbing attention just not just around in this country, but all over the world.
And this suit was filed, I think, on the 14th or 15th of the month. And we, Dan and I, are the taxpayer plaintiffs named, but also the Freedom From Religion Foundation is the organizational plaintiff.
Representing all of our members.
And we are suing the architect of the Capitol. And that's an unusual position, but it's actually an agency. And this is the person that was directed last week by both houses of Congress to spend about $100,000, $150,000 engraving religious mottos on the new Capitol Visitor Center in Washington, D.C.
Which was just opened last December, I think, officially opened.
And when it opened last December, there was a huge fuss by people like Representative DeMint.
South Carolina.
And Newt Gingrich and religious right groups because they claimed there wasn't enough God in the visitor center. And for those of you who haven't been to D.C. since this opened, it's a very important place because it's the only site that you can go through to get to Congress. If you're going to go see your member of Congress, if you're a tourist from anywhere in the world, you have to go through the doors of the Capitol Visitor Center. They spent billions of dollars on it.
I think it was like $600 million or so. It was a lot of money.
And then they said, and then the religious right said, there's not enough God there.
Well, there's no God there, is there, at all?
I think they actually did have In God We Trust in small lettering somewhere. But DeMint was mad because the original motto of the Constitution, which is E Pluribus Unum, from many come one.
Of our country, yeah.
That was decided by Franklin, Adams, and Jefferson. That was up, and he was distressed that apparently there wasn't enough God in the visitor center.
Too much plurality, right?
And so they passed very quickly last week. The House, with only 8 dissenters, approved it, and there was a voice vote in the Senate. And so we went to court.
What did they pass? A law to engrave
In God We Trust and the Religious Pledge of Allegiance on the Capitol Center.
So they're basically wanting to interfere and tamper with the work that the architect has already finished. They want to change the basic center.
Well, they have a religious purpose and mission, and I think they've been very overt about it, and that's very helpful to our lawsuit. But the real problem, the real issue here with this lawsuit is we're revisiting these changes that were made by Congress during the Red Scare, the McCarthy era.
1950s.
In the 1950s, when Ngawi Trust was first adopted as a national motto. And that wasn't until almost 200 years after our country was founded. But it had worked its way onto a lot of coins, and then Congress in the 50s also said it had to go on all the currency. But that didn't happen until 57. And then in 1954, they also amended the secular Pledge of Allegiance to insert the words under God. And you will remember that that Pledge of Allegiance was written by a clergyman who was liberal in 1892.
Bellamy was his name.
And it had no God in it, and generations of school children grew up reciting this godless Pledge of Allegiance, including you, Dan, right?
Well, in kindergarten, I learned it the original way. People, one nation, indivisible.
People who are old enough, people in their 60s, basically, and up, would have grown up saying the regular Pledge of Allegiance, and it's only been tampered with more recently. And so we are, our lawsuit is a way to get at these precedents, these very bad precedents.
So if they put up the original pledge without under God, we wouldn't
be
complain
happy
about that.
Yeah. Right. And there's been a lot of litigation, and we're involved in litigation, and Mike Newdow's involved in litigation, but we haven't really got at these bad precedents. And I can't tell you how many times I've been asked when I've been a guest on a radio show or something, some caller will say, but I can open my wallet and pull out a dollar bill, and that tells you that our country's founded on God, because the money says, in God we trust. So it's been a very bad, it's done violence to the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. It's perverted history.
And it's been hard to challenge that motto. The courts have not even accepted a case claiming that it's not even a religious phrase. Well, this case of ours this week might be a good way, or the best way, to actually get at the constitutionality of that In God We Trust motto.
And Jim DeMint, whom he mentioned, he was the sponsor of the Senate version of this resolution. He stated that the Capitol Visitor Center, without these engravings, supposedly gives the impression that the federal government is the answer to all of society's problems without emphasizing the integration of religion into government as being critical. And Newt Gingrich, who got up this petition drive at his website, said the same thing, that the creator is the foundation of our government. And so all of these violations that have happened are the result of the religious lobby.
So it's $100,000 or $150,000. Isn't that just a small amount that we're complaining about here? Now, these prominent inscriptions were lobbied for by such Christian right groups, religious groups, which don't believe in the separation between church and state. Such groups as the Heritage Foundation and,
as we said, Newt Gingrich.
Yes, it appears that this highly flawed individual, who lives up to the biblical notion that human beings are born with original sin, he proves it, Newt Gingrich took on this crusade as his own. And let's listen to what his spokesperson, Rick Tyler, had to say about why they're lobbying for prominent inscriptions of In God We Trust and the Pledge of Allegiance at the Visitor Center in Washington, D.C. And we have to apologize. It's kind of a poor sound quality, but we think you can make this out.
I credit Randy Forbes for leading the prayer caucus and Senator DeMint on the Senate side for standing up for people of faith and getting God represented in our history. God is central to American founding, and it's central to our future. And unfortunately, 3 million people of the Capitol will go and see a wonderful museum, but they'll miss an opportunity. It's a little bit like going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and not finding Elvis.
I mean, well, you know, some people want to make a religion of Elvis Presley, but we know he really lived. I mean, that's incontestable. So this is just ridiculous. This is this idea that the theocrats have, that our country was founded on God. And in fact, we have a constitution with no God in it. It is secular. It's based on secular principles and premises, and they just won't quit.
Some of the founders did believe in God, but they wrote a document that is completely vacant of any reference to a God.
And so we think this is an important lawsuit. And Dan, you were saying earlier, well, it's only $100,000. I mean, that's a lot of money. And that gives, because it's a clear, we can follow the stream of funding through Congress, taxpayers do have the right to challenge this funding. And it's, I am one of the plaintiffs, and I feel that this is not even accurate to say In God We Trust is the motto of our country means that those of us who are not religious are not we're not part of the we the people that you find in the preamble of the Constitution if you have to believe in God. And in order to be accurate, the motto would have to say, in God some of us trust, and wouldn't that be silly?
Or in certain gods or different types of gods. And, some
or
of
we've
us,
had a lot of wars over which God we trust in.
So it shouldn't matter how much money is spent on it, or even if it were paid for by By outside money.
Because it's put on the building that's representing Congress.
It's an act of Congress that is endorsing religion.
And as usual, we get a lot of flack. We get always a lot of crank mail when we file lawsuits and so on. And we also have gotten a lot of very supportive responses. But we did get a threat faxed to us the day after
Wednesday
the lawsuit.
Morning.
So, Dan, why don't you read that?
This fax came in Wednesday morning. Freedom from Religion Foundation. You can do as you wish in your own little world. But you are messing with my country, and all caps. We are in the majority. We are coming to get you, all of you, from your president down to your lawyer, your office people, all. So be aware, your time may be short. From, and it's from somebody named Lynch.
No, it says Lynch, meaning
Lynch,
they want to lynch us.
To execute without due process of law. So you had to call the police on this one.
This is a direct threat. And also it's traceable and it's kind of dumb. Not very nice. Why would a difference of opinion in the law cause somebody to give us a death threat? And what does that say about their religion and their security?
Look at the history of religious violence, and we know why these people are insecure. They've always done death threats through the beginning of recorded history over religious disagreements.
And again, it's just this principle that you do not exclude some people. You do not say that those of us who do not believe in God are not true Americans. You don't have a pledge that has a God in it. When you have a godless country, when you have a country where you can believe in God or not, we're free to reject religion or to embrace it, but our government is not free to have an opinion on it. So they should not be writing pledges that make us swear an oath to a God we don't believe in. They shouldn't be saying, in God we trust. It simply isn't right.
Join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help us fight legal fights like this. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We've been talking about the Foundation's new lawsuit to stop the inscribing of In God We Trust and the religious pledge at the Capitol Visitor Center in D.C. Our lawsuit is taken on behalf of our 13,500-plus membership. If you're a regular listener but not a member, help us to swell our ranks. Sign up because your membership supports our radio show and this very important litigation. Go to ffrf.org to join or ask for a complimentary issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and information about our activism. That's ffrf.org.
Coming up, we'll talk with award-winning science fiction author Ben Bova and have a little more news about the unfortunate intrusion of fundamentalist Christianity into the U.S. military.
My name is Paul Novak. I'm a doctor from Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm on Free Thought Radio, and I'm a dyed-in-the-wool atheist.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're back with Free Thought Radio. We've been talking about the Freedom from Religion Foundation's newest federal lawsuit. We're suing the architect of the Capitol in D.C. to halt prominent engravings of religious language at the Capitol Visitor Center.
And those include the motto, In God We Trust, and the Religious Pledge of Allegiance. And now we want to talk about a First Amendment abuse dating to last month involving the U.S. military and the federal government.
The Freedom from Religion Foundation has written Secretary of Defense Robert Gates a letter of complaint over the Christian invocation which the U.S. Army chaplain Thomas McGregor gave at the D-Day commemoration in France on June the 6th.
Chaplain McGregor gave this highly inappropriate sectarian invocation before all the assembled nations and dignitaries. And we have a clip of his prayer. Again, the sound quality is not great, but listen to his words.
Help each of us to look ahead to that grand and glorious day when you shall return, the dead shall be raised, loved ones be rejoined once again, and all wars shall cease. O God, see the day of your coming, we ask. Indeed, yours is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. In Jesus' name, amen.
So when people talk to God, why do they have to speak as if they were the voice of God, too? You probably caught, as you were listening to that, McGregor's primitive reference to believing in basically in the second coming. The dead shall be raised. and McGregor's recitation of the Lord's Prayer out of the New Testament, and ending his prayer in the name of Jesus.
While McGregor has the right to believe anything he likes, he should not have the power to preach his personal and divisive religious polemics as an official representative of the U.S. military, and especially not at an international public function. Not only were there many atheists in foxholes serving in the U.S. military during World War II, contrary to the myth, but today secularism is at an all-time high in the United States, Canada, and United Kingdom, and in France. So this was boorish, the assumption that all the listeners, all the nations of the world, are Christian, and the sectarian religious ritual should not have been inflicted on a diverse audience, and certainly not in our name.
Especially as it was founded upon a godless... Oh, excuse me, I went back into that God voice. Especially as our nation was founded upon a godless and entirely secular constitution.
And we do have a news release up at fffrf.org at our website under the news link, so you can actually watch the video of this prayer, and you'll see President Obama bow his head dutifully, close his eyes, and even audibly amen at the end of the prayer. So we also wrote President Obama to express our disappointment with the continuing insertion of Christian doctrine into the U.S. military and at this occasion.
And in our letter to Secretary of Defense, we asked for new and firm guidelines for every branch of the U.S. military, making it clear that military chaplains and military staff may not abuse their positions to proselytize or recruit for religion or promote sectarian doctrine on military time. Because, after all, military personnel take an oath to defend our secular constitution. They should not be using their position of authority to proselytize.
And we also complained about the very gratuitous religious references at the GoArmy.com website.
GoArmy, right?
GoArmy.com website used to recruit chaplains. So if you go to that website and you find the chaplain part, you can go look at it. It states that the U.S. chaplains are endowed by and led by the God that they serve, that they're shepherds. It's very proselytizing devotional language, inappropriate at an Army website.
It's right out of the Bible, the shepherds.
And so we asked Gates to remove that proselytizing language from the Army website. And, you know, there's been a whole host of scandals in the military, all kinds of Christianity at the Air Force. We deal with these complaints constantly. The U.S. Army needs to get its act together and respect the Constitution. This is a problem that's not going to go away until Obama and Gates address it.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We'll be back after this break to talk with science fiction writer Ben Bova about his distinguished career in science and literature and why he is an unbeliever.
I'm State Senator Ernie Chambers from Nebraska. I'm on Free Thought Radio, which is like an oasis in the Sahara Desert.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and Free Thought Radio is back.
And our guest on the phone today from Naples, Florida, is the science fiction and science writer, distinguished writer Dr. Ben Bova. Dr. Ben Bova's first published novel appeared in 1959. Since then, he's written 120 futuristic novels and nonfiction books, and he's been involved in science and high technology since way back at the beginning of the space age. Ben Bova is President Emeritus of the National Space Society, a past president of the Science Fiction Writers of America. Dr. Bova received the Lifetime Achievement Award of the Arthur C. Clarke Foundation for fueling humankind's imagination regarding the wonders of outer space. His 2006 novel, Titan, received the John W. Campbell Memorial Award for Best Novel of the Year. 2008, he won the Robert A. Heinlein Award for his outstanding body of work in the field of literature. At the OmegaCon in 2008 science fiction convention, Dr. Bova received the first annual Ben Bova Award. Well, that's fitting. For Astounding Achievement in Science Fiction Literature.
Outstanding
Achievement in Science Fiction Literature. His grand tour novels, such as Moonrise, Mars, and Titan, they combine romance and adventure, scientific accuracy to show how the human race will expand through the solar system and the impact this has on human lives and society as a whole. Many other nonfiction books have been honored by the American Library Association and others. Dr. Bulva has taught science fiction at Harvard and at the Hayden Planetarium. He's also directed film courses. He received his doctorate in education in 1996 from California Coast University. He's worked with filmmakers, TV producers such as Woody Allen, George Lucas, and Gene Roddenberry. Of course, Gene Roddenberry. Ben Bulva was the science analyst on CBS Morning News, editorial director of Omni Magazine, which I used to subscribe to. In 2001, Dr. Bulva was elected a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He received the 1996 Isaac Asimov Memorial Award. And well, that's just a brief excerpt of a very long bio. What a real honor to have you on our show today, Ben Bulva.
Well, thank you, Dan.
So before we talk about your life and your books and your achievements in that, word is that you also are quite a non-believer. We have some members of our group who've gone to some conventions and heard you talk, and you're very unabashed about your non-belief. Were you always raised religious? Were you raised religious? Were you always a believer?
I was raised in the Roman Catholic Church.
Oh, my goodness. So you had a long journey then, huh?
Or maybe a short journey.
It wasn't all that long.
And what prompted you to rethink your faith?
The Catholic Church teaches that faith is a gift from God, and it's a gift I never received, apparently. It always seemed kind of strange to me that we're depending on this supernatural power, and there's no real evidence that it exists. When I started understanding how science works, it occurred to me that there just is no evidence that there is a God, that the universe is huge and strange, and we can't explain all of it. But the explanation that it was done by God gives us no information at all. It's like saying, you know, the universe was built by Uncle George.
Do you think that just as most elite scientists tend to be non-believers, do you think that the elite science fiction writers tend to be non-believers?
I think there's a great mixture both among the scientists and the science fiction writers. A good deal depends on your upbringing as a child, but there are many scientists who are devout believers in one religion or another, and many science fiction writers who are. But I think there are just as many who are skeptics, and quite a few who are out-and-out atheists.
The Isaac Asimov and Gene Roddenberry and Ursula Le Guin, who's going to be speaking at our conference this fall.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, it's interesting to me that people tend to feel that if you don't have a religious belief, you cannot be a moral person.
I think that is the greatest problem that non-believers face, that myth. So what do you say?
I say that it isn't terribly moral to go around believing that there's a big detective in the sky who's going to punish you eternally if you don't follow his rules. Morality is based on your own free will, not on the fear of punishment.
And working to minimize harm and make the world a better place and treat others with respect and all of that. Your work in science, I suppose, really alerts us to the fact that we are natural creatures in a natural environment. And your expertise in science, then, of course, I think the more you learn, the less you believe is what happens.
Well, it can work that way. I think the more you learn, the more you realize there is still more to learn. Human curiosity is insatiable.
I remember something you wrote. I'm sorry. When you were the editor of Omni Magazine,
yes,
back in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, I used to be a Christian minister, and I was one of those creationists myself. I would stand on street corners and preach, and I changed my mind. And right toward the end of me changing my mind, or in the middle of that, I read this article that you wrote. In fact, I mentioned your article in my book, Godless. You wrote an article called The Creationists Equal Time. Do you remember that article?
Oh, yes.
What was that, about 1980 or...
More like 81, I would think.
81?
Around there.
And that article, it's just a one-page op-ed, just hit me between the eyes because you end it with this statement here that, are the creationists really fair-minded people who want only to present conflicting ideas? Ask the next creationist you meet whether he or she would be willing to have a chapter explaining Darwinian evolution inserted into the Bible along just side Genesis. Then you'll learn what equal time really means to them. And then when you wrote that, I don't know if you realize what an impact a paragraph like that can have on people, especially people like me who were thinking. What you did, I think what you did with this article is what you do with your science fiction. You take somebody outside of themselves, you turn them around and look back at yourself, and you say, oh, my goodness.
Well, then it worked.
It did work. And isn't that part one of the goals, I guess, if there are goals, of science fiction?
To take you out. There are goals in science fiction. One of them is to try to get you to think beyond the box, to realize that the universe is much bigger and more wonderful than we believe. But the incredible thing is that we can understand it. I think it was Einstein who said the most incredible thing about the universe is that it's understandable.
Yeah,
the difference between science and most religions is that science admits that we don't know everything, that we're trying to learn. And most religions take the point of view, this is the accepted belief. We know everything. There are no real questions to ask. You just take the belief as it's handed to you and accept it. And that, I think, is not very good for the human spirit or for human understanding.
Especially when creationists and now these so-called intelligent design people try to force everything to fit their a priori preconceived belief system.
Yeah, yeah. At least, in science, we admit mistakes. We admit when we're wrong. And science is a system of thought that tries to uncover wrong moves, that freely admits when something doesn't work.
Now, I wanted to say that you predicted the space race in the 1960s, the solar power satellites, discovery of interstellar chemicals in interstellar space, virtual reality, human cloning, stem cell therapy, ice on the moon, electronic book publishing, and zero gravity sex. And we want to know, has that happened?
No one will admit to it. There have been mixed crews on the space shuttle and aboard the couple of the Russian space satellites, space stations.
But there hasn't been a doctoral thesis yet on that.
Well, isn't it quite...
Well, one of the problems is that the two most prudish people in the world are the Americans and the Russians. And if we had a Polynesian space program, we'd know for sure.
Now, you were elected a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and your doctorate's in education. Of course, you're a science fiction writer, but that's a great honor, isn't it, to be a scientist?
I'm very proud of that.
Because
I'm not a practicing scientist. I write about science. I have worked with scientists almost all my life. But to be honored by the American Association for the Advancement of Science really was very satisfying to me.
Well, we are going to come back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're going to talk about Ben Bova's newest book, The Immortality Factor. It's not science fiction, and it's becoming a movie. So stay tuned.
My name is Rocco Giglio from Chicago, Illinois, and I am on Free Thought Radio.
Necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're speaking with the illustrious science fiction writer Ben Bova, and he's written more than 120 science fiction and futurist books, as well as nonfiction, has received many awards, and we'll talk about his newest book.
So, Dr. Bova, I read that you have a new book out called Immortality Factor, and if I read right, this was originally science fiction that has now changed into science fact. Is that it's now not a science fiction book, is that right?
It was a novel that I originally wrote about 12 years ago under the title Brothers, and much of what was in the novel was futuristic science. But in the 12 intervening years, science has caught up with it. The basic idea in The Immortality Factor is that scientists learn how to take ordinary cells and make them behave like stem cells. so that you can begin to regenerate human tissue, rebuild organs that are damaged by disease or trauma, rebuild an arm if you lose it. And all this is now no longer fiction. It is in the realm of clinical and laboratory work.
So it's not really a nonfiction book, but it's a...
It's a novel. It's about a pair of brothers, one a physical scientist and the other a medical doctor, who've had a sort of an off-and-on love-hate relationship through their lives, and they both fall in love with the same woman who jilts one of them to marry the other. So it's very much a novel with real characters, real people.
But based on real science, not science fiction.
Yes, based on real science.
So it's being made into a movie. Can you tell us more about it and who might be in it?
The project is in the very early stages. Oh. Kevin Fox is one of the top screenwriters in Hollywood, is working on a script based on the novel. And later in the year, we'll see how that goes.
Now, do you think that since stem cells can be made now just from regular adult cells instead of embryonic cells, do you think the religious right is going to back off their opposition to stem cell research?
I think some of that opposition will be muted. But the basic opposition, I think, is that people fear that by holding out the prospect of extending human lifespan, of gaining such long lives that we're virtually immortal, they feel that we're interfering with God's plan. And in fact, there are characters in the novel who have just this point of view. Whenever there's a new medical breakthrough, somebody hollers, you're trying to play God. Well, we've been playing God since the Stone Age. You know, we don't just sit there and have a headache. We chew the bark of a tree to give us some relief.
Later
we learn that what gives you the relief is salicylic acid, and we make aspirin tablets.
Well, and even John Stuart Mill said, you know, Catholic opposition to condoms, that would be like opposing an umbrella when it's raining.
And these same people who oppose stem cell research are wearing glasses and hearing aids, and they're having regular doctor visits, and they're extending. The life expectancy now is so much greater than it was back in biblical times.
Back in the age of Queen Victoria in England, anesthesia first came onto the medical scene. And church leaders proclaimed that anesthesia is all right in general, but it should never be given to a woman in labor, because the Bible clearly says you are to bring forth your children in pain and suffering. Well, the church took this position until Queen Victoria had a couple of children. And then she decided she would have anesthesia. And the queen, of course, is the head of the church. So the moral argument dissolved when the queen decided to have anesthesia. Now, anesthesia is generally used in childbirth, and the world has not dissolved in sin and corruption.
And a similar thing happened with lightning rods.
Oh, yes.
Until it was discovered that it was the church steeples that were the highest points that kept getting hit.
Yes.
And then suddenly science became our savior.
Well, it was a big step forward.
No, we're not really there yet, though, on stem cell research. It's just embryonic, if I might use that term.
That's a clever play on words, Annie. Yes, it's going to take a while before stem cell research pays off the dividends that it promises. But even here in the city of Naples, we've had people who go overseas and receive stem cell therapy for ailing hearts and come back much, much better.
Because the idea is that these cells can be differentiated to regenerate within a particular organ, then, like liver or heart.
Yes.
Boy, how do they do that? How do they know how to pinpoint a cell to direct it in one of those directions? It's amazing.
It's natural. They do it naturally. I mean, you started out as one little cell. But that cell had all the information needed to make you. And that cell grew and grew, and there you are.
Yeah,
and now, that information is still locked inside the DNA of every cell of your body, but it's been turned off. You really don't want your fingers to start growing teeth or things like that. So as the cells specialize, they lose their ability to make other kinds of cells. But the information is still there. It's just been switched off. And now what scientists are doing is learning how to turn on that information when you want it.
decades ago, that would have sounded not only like science fiction, but like fantasy writing, to think that we could do something like that.
Decades, or centuries ago, would have been called witchcraft.
Now,
it's very real.
I don't know if you want to answer this question, maybe you don't want to, but are you working on a new book, and can you talk about it?
Of course. I'm always working on a new book. What I'm working on now is a science fiction novel about exploring the planet-wide ocean of Jupiter. It's an ocean that's more than 10 times larger than the planet Earth. And in it are very strange creatures. The question in the novel is, are these creatures in the ocean of Jupiter intelligent? And how can you tell? How can you make contact with them, meaningful contact? You know, we have creatures on Earth like the dolphins and whales who may be intelligent in their own way, but it's hard for us to determine that because we are so different.
So the red spot might be a Jupiter hangout, huh? Jupiter bar.
Red spot is a huge hurricane. It's been there for several hundred years at least. It's not a good place to hang out.
Well, we really are honored to have you on the show. We thank you for being a guest, and we look forward to your future books.
And don't you have a website?
Oh, yes. It's very simple, www.benbova.com.
So, well, thank you so much for joining us, and everyone should look up your website, look up your books, and look out for that movie, Immortality.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear these shows on podcast.
You can join FFRF. Your membership or donation keeps us on the air, helps pay for the legal work we've been describing. Call 1-800-335-4021 if you want information about the organization, or go to ffrf.org. And we now are on Facebook and Twitter, and we have new action alerts every day, so go check out our website at ffrf.org.
And we also have a free thought forum of our own as well. So
if you're a regular listener, we hope you'll get involved and come back next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us and the world.